How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live, where you're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. We have so much stuff to talk about today. Last week was a big television event, the Super Bowl. I was actually going to try and joke about another big television event, but I actually couldn't think of one. The Super Bowl was last week, so we didn't do a show. We usually do them every Sunday. However, last week, we used to do the show on Super Bowl Sunday every year, but then we discovered that not a lot of people were actually listening to this show in the middle of the Super Bowl. So we deferred, we did the job to the Super Bowl, and now we are back. And we have 2 weeks of stuff to talk about, not the least of which is the WWE Royal Rumble pay-per-view. We have not talked about the Royal Rumble on this show yet. We're going to talk about the winner of this year's Royal Rumble, all of the plans leading into WrestleMania. Plans change, as everybody is well aware, but kind of getting down to the nitty-gritty, where some of these plans are actually not going to change. We'll talk about what we know for WrestleMania so far, the Elimination Chamber, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. And this afternoon, there's another pay-per-view, TNA. I don't remember the name of the pay-per-view. None of you do either. But we're going to run down the lineup for the show. 37% drop in TNA pay-per-view buys over the last 6 months of 2011. We'll talk about that as well. Why is nobody buying these pay-per-views besides the obvious? We're going to talk about that and the lineup for the show, which is coming up moments after this program goes off the air. And, of course, I would be remiss if we did not talk about young Nick Diaz, who last week at UFC 143 lost a very close decision to Carlos Condit, a decision close enough that myself and a number of others as well felt that Diaz should have won or could have won. It was a close fight, so perhaps should is the wrong word. But I scored it for Diaz. He failed. It doesn't matter because he also failed a drug test. I'm going to talk about that, what it means for UFC, Nick Diaz's future, what he's saying about his future, and more. All of this coming up after the break. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 2 hours, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We're going to kick it off today, why not, with the TNA pay-per-view. And before we came back from the break, I said, Mike, is it against all odds? And you said, yes. And I said, my God, I remembered. And then, as I Googled against all odds, first thing that came up is the Wikipedia page. And it's a listing of all of the TNA against all odds pay-per-views starting in 2005. And when you get down here to TNA against all odds 2012, February 12, 2012, from Orlando, Florida, main event, it says TBA. It's the afternoon of the show, and they have not updated what the main event of tonight's pay-per-view is. Luckily, when I click on it, there is, in fact, a lineup. So, let's get into this. Mike, what's the main event of the show?
I would assume the main event of the show would be the four-way for the TNA Championship.
Do you know the four men involved?
Bobby Roode, Bully Ray, James Storm, and Jeff Hardy.
That is correct, my friend.
With Sting limping around as the special guest enforcer outside the ring.
That is correct. Bobby Roode, Bully Ray, James Storm, and Jeff Hardy in a four-way for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. With Sting as a special referee. I figured, as did anybody with a brain, that Bobby Roode and James Storm would main event the lockdown show in a singles match in a steel cage, and that these men would be kept apart until that date. I was wrong. They are wrestling in a match tonight, which, coincidentally, comes about 2 weeks after they had a singles match on television for free with no build and a finish. This is why nobody buys pay-per-views. Because the storylines suck. What can you say? Four-way for the title. I figure that Bobby Roode comes out with the belt. Maybe he'll pin. You know, maybe here's my finish. Bully Ray has a pin on James Storm, meaning he would have won the title. But Bobby Roode throws Bully Ray off and pins James Storm. And there you go. He's the winner. Which will set up Bobby Roode versus James Storm at Lockdown. And Bobby Roode versus Bully Ray at Victory Road, which I believe is the next pay-per-view in March. What do you think about that idea?
I could see them going with that. I think they will actually just pair off one of the guys, and I think that one guy is probably going to be Bully Ray, who will do something to Jeff Hardy, leaving Jeff Hardy open for Bobby Roode to get a cheap pin, which will lead to then a three-way at Victory Road and then lead to a singles match with Bobby Roode and James Storm, I assume, when no one would care about it by then, 2 months from now.
Now, I know some of you were asking, Brian, how would Bobby Roode pinning James Storm set up Bobby Roode versus James Storm in a cage at Lockdown? The answer is because it's TNA. That's why.
Hey, this whole thing's been convoluted with these two from the start and did not work out well from the start, so.
Nobody's figured it out yet. I'm not blown away by this pay-per-view lineup.
Well, here's the thing. I can name the five guys in that match. Unfortunately, for the rest of the card, it's kind of a crapshoot to try to pull those out of your rear end without looking at them.
I think this match will be acceptable, but I just saw a tag match very similar to this on television, and I was not, I don't know, I guess it was fine. I wasn't, I actually have very little memory of it, so that should tell you something right there. It wasn't like
Sting
something
getting hurt or the...
Yeah, Sting got hurt, that's right.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's as close, you know, Bully Ray walking out on Roode, leaving him to give up and, you know, putting the belt in his face, I think will probably be the extent of, you know, them. Although, really, again, Bully Ray, I not that I would care if he was in the top of the TNA mix, but, you know, it just, I'm sure he could do something else.
That's
I like
right.
Bully Ray. I just, you know, don't necessarily want to see him really in the title mix.
It was Bully, Roode, Storm, and Sting because presumably Jeff Hardy couldn't get to the UK with his drug charges on his record. That's I presume that's what happened with Jeff Hardy, why he did not go overseas. Anyway, that's that is the main event of the show. Also on this program, in the opener, it is Jesse Sorensen versus Zema Ion to determine the number one contender for the X Division title. I predict Jesse Sorensen wins.
I will say the same thing.
I think they're going to do a lot of flips.
You think? This is not going to be Les Thatcher's favorite match to start off this pay-per-view.
I predict a lot of moves.
How about any of them being hit?
Well, I'm sure some of them.
Okay.
I would, listen, I don't think that Zema Ion's the best worker I ever saw. Jesse Sorensen's a pretty decent worker, but nobody cares about him one bit. But I don't think either of them are going to sidestep their opponent when he does a dive like Miz did to Truth on Monday.
Oops.
We'll get to that later. Gail Kim and Tara for the Knockouts title. It'll be a wrestling match. It'll be fine.
Yeah, it actually will be fine. No problem with it whatsoever. 6 minutes, Gail Kim wins.
Sounds good. We've got Garrett Bischoff versus Gunner.
This guarantees Ric Flair, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, all right, I'm fine with this. This is going to be awful. Gunner is, you know, good for the amount of experience he has. Garrett Bischoff is Garrett Bischoff, so I assume we're going to get Hogan, Flair, you know, a whole bunch of chicanery in there. And I'll go with Gunner winning. Garrett got to punch out his father on Thursday night, so I always say Gunner wins or by some sort of nefarious means.
I think the match is going to be all right. I like Gunner. They've had matches before. They should know what to do by now. So I think Gunner is going to do his best. I think Garrett's going to win again. because I don't think you're going to see Garrett losing anytime soon. He's the next big thing in wrestling, Mike.
Remember when people used to complain about Eric Watts?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not calling Garrett Bischoff George Gulas at this point in his career, but, you know, really? Really? You know, we talk about Miz being a believable character. You know, there's one thing about an Alberto Del Rio, a Kurt Angle, a guy. You at least know that they can kick your ass. And obviously in wrestling, there's lots of guys. It's putting on the front that you can. But, you know, realistically, I don't care what kind of shape he's in right now. Does anyone believe Garrett Bischoff can do any sort of ass-kicking whatsoever?
Actually, I saw him beat up some dudes in a MMA gym doing wrestling moves. That was pretty cool.
Well, he also landed a punch, you know, with the side of his hand to the top of his father's head, you know. So, you know, by Key Fabulous terms, I don't know.
Yeah. In a real fight, I'd pick Gunner, not going to lie. I know that Garrett has a long karate history, but I'm still picking Gunner. Not in the match, though. We have AJ Styles and Kazarian, which I think is going to be good. I don't think it's going to be great. I have not seen a lot of great Kazarian matches. I've seen some pretty good Kazarian matches, but not great Kazarian matches. This will also have some flips in it, I think. But I think that'll be less offensive than the flips in the Jesse Sorensen-Zema Ion match. I don't know what this... I mean, obviously there's the whole Christopher Daniels thing. But I just saw Christopher Daniels and AJ Styles on Thursday. So I don't even know what we're leading to. So anyway, I predict that... I don't know what I predict here. I just want to see a good match.
That's one of your best bets on the card.
Crimson and Matt Morgan against Joe and Magnus for the tag team titles. I hope Joe and Magnus win. I like them. I actually think they're going to win. I think that many people had their eyes open to Magnus on the TV taping from the UK where he cut his promo. And I think they're going to give these guys the belts. I could be wrong, but I think they're going to get the belts. We're going to get Mike's thoughts on this match. Plus, we got one more bout to discuss after the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here kicking the show off with excitement. The TNA pay-per-view preview for this evening. I'm trying to get it out of the way quickly, I'm not going to lie. TNA pay-per-views.
Well, you know what? This show, realistically, you know, unfortunately for them, probably not going to do very well. So if you're one of those people that just don't want to separate yourself from that, then you should probably, after you know, the show goes off the air here, just go over to the WrestlingObserver.com website where Dave will be doing a running commentary on the show.
It is, at this point, I'm not going to lie, it is absolutely impossible for me to muster up any excitement about TNA and their pay-per-view this weekend. Listen, I thought the television the last 2 weeks looked really cool. There were a lot of people in the UK. The shows did not offend me, really, in any way. And in some ways,
piped-in crowd noise was replaced by actual crowd noise.
Yeah, in some ways it was some of the best TV they've done. But at the same time, this afternoon, we're back in the Impact Zone. Just another pay-per-view. It doesn't mean a thing. Nobody's buying it. I don't care how big a fan of TNA you are. That doesn't change the fact that the December show did 7,000 buys. 7,000!
Hey, Evander Holyfield may have had a fight in West Virginia at like a hotel and casino last year that may have done that money.
1.6 million people watch their show every week. And they're getting 7,000 of them to buy their shows. So it's impossible to muster up any excitement about this. Significantly more people are listening to my voice today than are watching that TNA pay-per-view. And again, that's not to put myself over. That should not be the case. But it is. So, I'm doing my best, but realistically, we're going to move on with this segment here very quickly. Any thoughts on the tag team match?
Well, you know, with Magnus being Sir Brutus Magnus in Ring Ka King, which I haven't seen yet, but apparently he's a player there. I hope he and Samoa Joe win the belts because then they can actually defend them in matches that I want to see. Although the bad part about this is if that happens, that leaves open two spots on the show for both Crimson and Matt Morgan to have singles matches with somebody.
No, they got to remain a team. They have to.
You think we can send them to OVW? I mean, Matt Morgan was quite good there, stood out there when he was there with Jim Cornette, and Crimson could just use
Not
it.
Really. Not going to lie.
Well, I mean, he was big.
He did stand out due to his sheer size. That's true.
He was standing next to Tank Tolan, you know?
Yeah, he was bigger than Tank Tolan. That is correct. That is correct. I would be fine with let Joe and Magnus win the belts. Let them defend them at Victory Road. And if you want to put them back on your big guys at lockdown, knock yourself out. This company just needs, like, a total makeover. I feel like I've said this 8,000 times. The company just needs, like, a giant makeover. Just start over, you know? Like when you're playing some sort of video game. My video game knowledge ends at about Super Mario Brothers. But, you know, you're playing that game and you die three times or whatever, and you've lost your last life, you just start over again. You start over fresh. You got three new lives. You got magic mushrooms everywhere, which actually, from watching TNA, there may already be magic mushrooms everywhere. But the fact of the matter is, just start over again. Just start over, start a brand new set of storylines, and let's give it another go. Because what's happening right now is not working. And it's not even like it's not working in the sense that everything is just in a holding pattern. No, everything is worse. Everything is worse off. Even those awesome shows that everybody thought were great in the UK with all those fans going nuts and everything like that. The second show, not even like the first show. I know that they were disappointed with the rating of the first show. It's like a 1-2. And there was disappointment. And I thought, well, you know, nobody bothered to advertise in advance, hey, we're going to the UK next week on TV, 7,000-seat building. Make sure you tune in. Of course not. No mention of that. No mention that Hulk Hogan was going to be there for however many people might have tuned in for that. You know, they just assumed that we were going to tune into TNA, see all those people, and go, my God, I must watch this whole show. Maybe they assumed that people would be watching, I don't know, something else on a different channel, but somehow they would be compelled to turn to Spike at 9 o'clock p.m. on Thursday night and go, my God, look at all these people. Well, guess what? That doesn't happen. You have to advertise your stuff in advance. So anyway, the first rating, a 1-2, I thought, nah, well, it's your own fault. You did a bad job of promotion. You didn't tell people anything, so why did you expect them to watch? But then week two, it was like, okay, so week two, you at least, everybody saw the last week, so maybe they saw all those people there, you know, all those, you know, the 1.2 rating, all those 1.6, 1.7 million people, maybe they saw that show and they're like, my God, we got to tune in for sure next week. Well, the second week, 1-1. So, got to be a change. It's got to be a change, because right now it's painful for me. It's painful for me to spend time talking about this product here on this show. I'm fighting to have some excitement here talking about this, and it's non-existent. We will finish. Oh, go ahead.
That's the whole thing, and it's just I don't. I'm terrible with percentages, but I don't know what the, you know, 7,000, what that percentage is in relation to 1.6 million that watch the show. And, you know, they don't have massive revenue streams. I know TV is their biggest thing, and they want to, you know, they look at that rating and they look at the people that, you know, are obviously diehard watching them week after week after week because they have 1.6 million viewers, and it always varies from, what, 1 million to 1.6 million. So they're always around there, and you can't get any of them to buy the pay-per-view. And you give them no reason to buy the pay-per-views, and that's, again, you don't have a whole lot of, you know, monetary streams rolling into you. You just, again, cut it to 6, increase the price, build to them, make them special, because it's crazy. It's crazy.
The percentage is less than 1/2 of 1%.
It was 0.4. I mean, that's think that's scary. It's scary, and I know they could go, well, WWE claims this worldwide base and see what they're getting. And you know what? Yeah, you're right, but it's not anywhere to the level that you're at, and it's a completely different situation in a lot of ways. No, it's not something that, you know, WWE shouldn't be concerned about, but it's not even comparable if a TNA backer wanted to do that. It's just, it's incredibly bad business because, again, if... Obviously, it's still going to be one of the best-rated things, at least till Bellator gets on there. It's going to be their best-rated show. That's fine and everything. But, you know, if when that runs out, then what?
You know, when I was a little kid, I used to read about mail order. And they said that, like, you know, when you get all that junk mail and everything like that, and everyone's like, why did you send me this Scientology packet or whatever? Which I still get, by the way, but that's a long story. But they said that, like, you know, a real good response rate is, you know, like a great response rate is 10%. So if you send out like 1,000 of these deals, you know, a great response rate, if you target the right audience, is you know, 100 people will purchase. And an average response rate is 2%. So if I sent out 100 mailers, I guess largely at random or to a targeted list, you know, maybe 2% of the people would respond. Well, TNA is targeting their audience because these people are actually watching a professional wrestling program, and they are trying to sell to that audience a professional wrestling pay-per-view, and they're not getting 2%. They're not getting 1.5%. They're not getting 1%. They're not even getting 0.5%. They're getting 0.43% of their audience to actually buy these pay-per-view events. It's astonishing that you could fail so mightily at selling your product.
With that said, I do like Austin Aries and Alex Shelley.
I was going to say, that's going to be a great match. It's going to be worth $44.95. Doubtful.
No, absolutely not. But at least it will be somewhat of a saving grace.
Besides, I figure it doesn't matter. I've been burned so many times by TNA. If I really wanted to see this match, I wouldn't buy the pay-per-view. I'd wait till they gave it to me for free on Impact on Thursday, which they invariably are going to do.
Yeah, because realistically, there could be some sort of stupidity ending this thing. And then, yes, yeah, so we're going to have the finality of it.
Yeah, we'll have the real finish on Thursday.
Always a brilliant thing, and WWE incredibly guilty with this, too. And in fact, you know, some of the things that TNA has done that WWE has almost seemingly followed is amazing, which is make people pay for a TV show that you're going to give them for free because you have more viewers, you know, watching instead of paying on a Monday night or a Thursday night. It's insanity to me.
Yep. Self-fulfilling prophecy right there. Now, before we go any further, we got about a minute and a half in this segment, but I hope that's enough time for you to talk about Okada, a young Japanese fellow who in TNA was a comedy guy, and he is now the champion of the world.
Yes, the New Japan IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. He knocks off Hiroshi Tanahashi, who had held the belt for 13 months, set the record for title defenses. But yes, Okada, who people will know as
Okado.
Yes, they're doing the takeoff Samoa Joe's Green Hornet takeoff sort of thing that Bruce Lee did in TNA before he was wrapped up and beaten to death or something like that by Elijah Burke. But yeah, he ends up being the IWGP champion. Comes back from Mexico in January. They put him over big on their version of WrestleMania on January 4th. He comes out after Tanahashi breaks the record for defenses, challenges him to the match that they had today, and wins the title in what is a big surprise because he's only 24 years old. And they usually don't go out on a limb like this. The last time they did that was with Shinsuke Nakamura, and it didn't work out quite the way they wanted to. But different era, different times, different management, and it's a big deal. And it's going to be interesting to see if he can run with the ball and the new gimmick he's got.
We're going to talk more about all of this after the break, and I'm going to talk a little bit about Nick Diaz, who, in fact, dropped the ball about 5 times, actually. After the break, Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour and a half talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And, of course, as noted, all Sports Byline USA Radio Network affiliates. 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific is the TNA pay-per-view. Don't miss it! Nah, you can miss it. But the point is, if you do miss it, or if you don't, head to WrestlingObserver.com, both during and after the show. During the show, live running play-by-play of the event with Dave Meltzer. After the show, a brand new edition of Wrestling Observer Radio exclusively available to members at WrestlingObserver.com. We have a subscription area, $10.99 per month. That's it. That's a couple of cups of coffee. For $10.99, you get a radio show every single day. At least a radio show every single day. I personally do radio shows usually several times a day. Virtually every day. I've had many Thursdays where I've done four shows in one day. If you've got a commute, if you like to listen to stuff at the gym, like to listen to stuff in the car, like to listen to stuff while jogging, you will never run out of audio if you subscribe to WrestlingObserver.com. Because not only do you get every brand new show, let's say that you sign up and you got a long commute, 5-hour commute, and you listen to an entire day's worth of shows on the way to work, and you're like, man, too bad I don't have anything to listen to on the way back. Well, guess what? You do. Because if you go to the archives, every single show that we have ever done dating back to 2005, which is over 5,000 hours of audio, just grab something, listen to it on the way home. You will never run out of audio. Because we keep adding every single day. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. Brand new show later on tonight. Myself and Dave will have another one tomorrow night after Raw. I got some fun shows coming up over the next several weeks here. And, of course, Adam and Mike, Big Audio Nightmare, is available as well with our buddy Mike Sempervivi. And, Mike, before we go on here, before we talk about Nick Diaz, this crazy man, you actually have a wrestling tie-in with the recently deceased Whitney Houston. Is that correct?
Well, yes. Yes, in a way I do. Professional wrestling has taught me everything in life. I know you've heard me say that before. But, you know, growing up in the 80s, WWF, you know, long before there were issues about royalties and using people's music to use as bumpers on your shows, WWF would always have plenty of songs they would use. I think Thriller was the opening to All American Wrestling or Spotlight Challenge, one of those shows. And in the breaks in and out, they would always have, you know, popular songs. And one of them was How Will I Know by Whitney Houston, which, you know, that coupled with the fact that they played that song, I believe, every single day, 37 times a day for at least 3 solid years. I actually still have that song on my iPod, as I do many of those old break songs, because they just make me laugh.
I am reading here an article from the Daily Mail in the UK. It claims that Miss Houston drowned alone in a bathtub, having accidentally overdosed on a cocktail of prescription drugs and alcohol in a hotel room. So, essentially very similar to many wrestler deaths. It's very sad, but I'm sure that everybody listening to this has read about a million things about this today, and if you haven't, I'm sure you will as soon as you open up a newspaper or go on the internet. So, anyway, we shall move on back to wrestling and mixed martial arts and talk about Nick Diaz. UFC 143, Nick Diaz versus Carlos Condit. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about this ad nauseum, and the whole story, obviously, was that if Nick Diaz won, he was getting a shot at GSP in a match GSP demanded. And as it turns out, didn't happen. Went to a decision. Decision went to Carlos Condit. A lot of talk afterwards of a rematch being signed. Both sides had reportedly agreed to it. And then it came out that, in fact, no rematch was going to happen because Nick Diaz failed his pre-fight drug test for marijuana. Where to begin? Mike, how did you score this fight?
I actually had it 48-47 for Condit. I don't have my notes in front of me. I think it was, I gave him the second, third, and fourth round, or first, I can't even remember now, but definitely the third and fourth round. I gave Diaz the fifth. You know, I thought Condit was, you know, it didn't, what drive, well, there's a lot that drove people nuts about this fight, but it was the style of fight that Condit fought, that he just fought the right fight to beat Nick Diaz. And, he, you know, all this stuff about him, yes, he was circling and back, but it was a defensive style, and that also he landed more punches with and landed more strikes, and it wasn't the prettiest thing in the world. But the whole thing is, I got to beat Nick Diaz to get to the big money with George St. Pierre and get to that title. You know, he fought the right fight. It wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing thing in the world. And Nick Diaz, you know, of course he's incredibly popular, and people were pulling for him, and most of them probably looking at that fight through that prism and not, you know, just on the Condit versus Diaz. They were thinking about Diaz versus GSP, too, when they were watching this thing, because I don't know. You know, it doesn't hurt my feelings that people thought that Diaz won, because I can see that. I really can. But with that said, the outrage was kind of ridiculous, and, you know, by some was just, it was way too over the top, because it's hard for me, you know, if you want to say, okay, Diaz won 48-47 and barely won, okay, I can give you that one, but him, like he was, you know, mortally raped and ripped off and bamboozled by Carlos Condit and the judges, that's just not right.
I was really entertained seeing the response to Condit's strategy on the internet afterwards. Everyone talking about, oh, he's running, he's Caleb Starnes. And listen, I'm not a fan of guys running in fights, obviously. But you know what? I was watching that fight, and to be honest with you, the person that I was infuriated with was Diaz, because I've seen Diaz fight a lot, and anybody complaining about Condit's strategy, don't become a fighter, because you'll be killed. Your strategy would obviously be to fight the other guy's fight, and it's going to get you beat quick. Okay, nobody in their right mind is going to go in there with Nick Diaz and fight Nick Diaz's fight. He has a fight that he fights. And if you go in there and you stand right in front of him, he's going to punch you in the face a million times, and he's going to beat you.
It's like Gomi.
It's like what?
The same way guys would do to Gomi, where it was just like when Gomi was, and I was a big fan of his, but when people were really getting behind him, it was like, you know, that whole Fireball Kid thing is because people want to stand in there and bang with him, which is just completely ludicrous.
Yeah, this is not how you fight a fight, unless your entire point of fighting is just I'm gonna get beat up for the fans. Which, if that's your thing, great. But this was an interim title fight to get a shot at GSP and his belt and millions of dollars. So you're not gonna stand there right in front of Nick Diaz like a complete imbecile and get punched in the face. So what he did was smart. I was infuriated watching Diaz because the first two rounds I gave to Nick, because I felt that he was fighting his fight. And finally Condit started to figure this out, and he was just getting away. He wasn't allowing himself to get quartered. He'd get out of the way, and in getting out of the way, he'd land some shots. And after about the third or fourth round, I'm sitting there and I'm just watching this fight going, Nick, do something different. Your strategy is not working at all, and you are losing. You are losing this fight right now. And it's funny because if you listen to his corner, I kind of felt bad for Nick, because part of the problem is his corner's telling him he's winning. His corner's telling him, you're doing great. You're winning. Keep going. He's running. And so, of course, Nick goes in and keeps doing the same thing he was doing, and he loses his decision. So I really had no problem. I had no problem with, you know, I thought Nick won, but I had no problem with them giving the decision to Condit. That's fine. It's a close fight. These rounds, you know, I gave him 1, 2, and 5, and you'd really make an argument for pretty much all of those rounds if you wanted to, even 5, which a lot of people thought was a very decisive round for Diaz because of the fact that he got his back and was working for a choke. But the reality is, he got his back, he didn't get a choke, and he lost a position. So if you really want to argue that the damage that Condit did in the first half of the round exceeded the back take there at the end, which resulted in nothing, great! So if you want to give the fight to Condit, that's fine. I got no problem with that, you know. But then we have the drug test failure. How does this happen, Mike? How does this happen? Unless you, I mean, there's no answer unless you want to psychoanalyze Nick Diaz. I mean, Nick Diaz likes to smoke weed. He said this himself. But you know what? Nick Diaz has a lot of friends that also like to smoke weed. And there are a lot of other fighters that love to smoke weed. None of them are failing. Particularly in the biggest fight of their life. How does this happen? How does this happen?
He's just that guy. You ask how it happens to Steve Howe or Strawberry or Dwight Gooden in baseball, Lawrence Taylor in football, Dexter Manley in, you know, it's just that guy. Nick Diaz is that guy. A lot of people like smoking weed. It's cool. If you get tested for it, though, you can't do it. You just can't do it. And no matter where you come down on the marijuana issue in everyday life, when it comes to laws, when it comes to sports, when it comes to anything, at the end of the day, you have already failed the test. Forget about any of the other stuff that would be associated to the press conference, all the other stuff. You failed after the Gomi fight. You are already been suspended for it. It's illegal. They're going to be testing you again. You don't have the best rep. You did it anyway. And yeah, you may have only done it, you know, 3 weeks ago where it didn't affect you now, but doesn't matter. The metabolites were in your system. You don't fail the test. But that's Nick Diaz. And with the double standard of Nick Diaz, which I am actually, believe it or not, all for, Lance Storm will kill me for this, but there's always those guys in sports, and UFC's already got one in Chris Leben, where after a year, if Nick is, you know, lucid enough and positive enough to want to come back, as long as he doesn't test again, you go through all the same headaches all over again.
Yeah, hold on. As long as he doesn't test again, how can you even conceive of this happening?
Hey, look, this is where UFC could also, you know, again, if they push the issue, then they're going to have to be held to the fire on it. But Dana could come out right now and go, well, you know what, Caesar, you're in charge of him. You're his trainer. You should really test him every week, and we want to know. Are you going to agree to that? I mean, there's a lot of things the UFC could do to you know, get their pound of flesh back or do something like that, and if Diaz doesn't want to do it, then so be it. But, you know, still, if again, unless somebody pops up, you still got to look at it as a business, even though it's a slimy move, and go and think about GSP and Diaz.
If you don't want to just fire Nick Diaz, then just publicly say, we are holding you to your retirement, my friend.
Yeah.
You can't use the guy anymore, Mike. You just can't. Because he's failed twice now. And this is coming on the heels of he missed flights. He missed press conferences. I mean, I don't know how much of it has got out. But you remember that press conference where he like missed 3 flights and didn't show up?
Of course.
Okay, that's not the extent of it. This year, between his signing with UFC and today, I think, I should even say a number because I don't know. But I think he's, I'll just say this. He's missed flights that we never heard about.
Yeah.
These were not the first and the only flights that he missed. He's missed flights a lot. We've actually got to head to a break right when I was getting going. We're going to talk more here in a bit. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. I had just gotten going on a Nick Diaz rant when we came up against the break. Now we've got a short segment before the top of the hour. And then when we come back from the top of the hour, we got another short segment. So I don't even really want to get going. I'm gonna hold my rant off, and we're going to switch subjects here very quickly. And when we come back from our top of the hour break, after that short segment, we'll get back on Diaz. So in the meantime, let's very quickly here talk about Alberto Del Rio and how much he hates The Miz.
Very relaxed in saying it, too, on that radio show that he had appeared on, relatively out of character, just kicked back, talking like a normal sports fan would.
You know what's funny about that interview? He did an interview, everybody, and they asked him if there's anybody that he doesn't like for real, and he buried The Miz. And it's very clear listening to it, at least to me. Maybe I'm wrong. I have been wrong before, believe it or not. It's very clear that, like, Del Rio knows that management loves him. Vince McMahon loves him. He knows he's a tough guy. He has an MMA record. He's fought in mixed martial arts. He was a great amateur wrestler. Miz was a guy in a reality show. Long story short, he has absolutely no concern about Miz beating him up if word gets out about this. And he knows that politically he is in a much better position than Miz, so it doesn't matter what he says about the guy. And very confidently, he just explained how much he hated The Miz. And he thought he was fat, weak, and ugly. It was amazing. It was an amazing interview. He just didn't care at all.
I like the signing of Alberto Del Rio. That's the Alberto Del Rio that that he had somehow morphed into, and were during the vignettes. That's the Alberto Del Rio I want to see on Raw every week.
Well, you may get to see more of it starting tomorrow, in fact, as he should be returning on Raw tomorrow night. We're going to head back to the top of the hour break. When we come back, we got more to talk about, including Nick Diaz. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour talking pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, and stage plays. Weren't expecting that, were you? I went to Oklahoma last week. While all of you were watching the Super Bowl, I went to Oklahoma.
Not to the state of Oklahoma.
I didn't go to Oklahoma for Raw, no. I went to the stage play Oklahoma. My wife's sister is a performer in Oklahoma. In fact, she plays a harlot. And what are you laughing about?
Nothing.
This stage play was awesome. I don't know if you guys have ever been to Oklahoma. It's funny. I was talking about this on Wrestling Observer Radio, exclusively at WrestlingObserver.com. And I mentioned that it was better than wrestling nowadays because the storyline actually made sense throughout the entire show. You had baby faces, you had heels, and I noted that at the beginning of the play, you've got the guy and the gal. Doesn't even matter anybody's names. You just had the guy and the gal, and you could tell they liked each other, but they had to pretend like they didn't. But you knew, like, at the end of the play that they were going to get together. And that's what happened. There was no wacky swerve. She didn't leave the baby face for the heel, making the baby face look stupid. It all made sense. And somebody emailed me and just said, would have been nice for a spoiler warning. I thought that was so funny. Because it's like, spoiler warning. Any good movie, you can watch the movie, and there's the guy and the gal, and you know they're going to get together at the end. And they do. Because that's a great story. It's a story that goes back to the beginning of time. All of these stories, these great stories, are timeless. You know what's going to happen. That's why they're great stories! So anyway, I just was amazed when I watched this. Like, whenever I watch, like, real entertainment, it strikes me in the face how stupid some of this pro wrestling entertainment can be with these storylines. Because they just do what you expect, and it's fine. We're going to head to a break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, everything MMA and pro wrestling related, including storylines in the stage play Oklahoma. 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern is the TNA pay-per-view. We ran it down in more ways than one in the first hour. And if you want results, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. Dave Meltzer is going to be doing live running play-by-play on the front page of the website, which will in fact be read by significantly more people than will actually buy the show. Afterwards, in a show that may be heard by more individuals and watch the pay-per-view, Dave Meltzer and I are going to be running down the results. Play-by-play, backstage notes, all the news from the weekend. Wrestling Observer Radio.
I'm pretty sure that's going to get more listeners in this pay-per-view.
I'd have to really think about that, actually. But the point is, you'll be able to listen to it, all of the results of the show at WrestlingObserver.com afterwards. And here we are talking about Nick Diaz. I started this rant 20 minutes ago, and I had to take a break from it due to some short commercial breaks, but now I got some time! So, Mike, it is time for you and me to debate whether Nick Diaz should ever be used again by UFC. I believe you vote yes, I vote no. Let me tell you why first. Listen, this guy, he's failed twice. He missed myriad flights, press conferences. The deal is, unlike in pro wrestling, when a guy fails, he's done. He's out. Nick Diaz is likely out for a full year as a result of this. You can't book him in any more fights for a year unless you want to go against what the commissions rule, which you're not going to do. If Las Vegas says you're out for 1 year, he is not fighting again for UFC for 1 year. That's a fact. Now, I realize that some people say, well, you know, UFC took Chael Sonnen to Texas before he got relicensed in California. You can make that argument if you want to. But you know what? He still sat out for the full term of his California suspension. Yes, he was not relicensed before he fought again. But for the term of his suspension, UFC did not, for example, take him to Abu Dhabi to fight. He did not fight for the entire length of his California suspension. If you want to argue whether he should have been licensed or not before he fought again, that's all fine and good. But during the time that he was suspended, they didn't have him fight. So Nick Diaz is not fighting for probably a year. We don't know how long the suspension will be. Maybe it would be complete madness, but maybe for his second offense, they'll only give him 6 months. I would be gobsmacked. I would be gobsmacked if they only suspended him for 9 months. I think they're going to get him out for a year. But the point is, if Nick Diaz was a WWE superstar and he had two strikes, and on his third strike, you knew, well, you know, we got to fire the guy. The fact of the matter is that there are no independent commissions testing the WWE wrestlers. Yes, there is an independent outside organization doing the testing. But if Vince McMahon really, really honest to God wanted to, and I should note, I have no proof that this has ever happened. I don't know if it's ever happened. But if you have a guy, let's say that Jeff Hardy was still employed, and Jeff Hardy has two strikes, and Jeff Hardy tests positive for something. If WWE really wanted to, I'm pretty sure they could cover it up. Because there's no outside organization that is going to yank Jeff Hardy's license. They're merely going to say, Vince, the guy failed. You've gotta fire him. That was his third strike. And Vince could say, listen, we hired you to do this. We're not firing this guy. If they really wanted to, they could do that.
They've already changed the rules.
In what way?
Well, no, as far as letting people on TV, they've already tweaked
thing. Yeah.
Where they've had to, well, we need to clean some things up first.
Yeah, they've tweaked their drug policy before. And again, honest to God, I think that if with the exception of maybe like John Cena or Randy Orton or somebody like that, I think that if a guy got a third strike, they'd fire him. And in fact, I think they have, actually. I'm not positive. I have to go back. But the point is, I would think that in 99.99% of cases, if a guy got his third strike, they'd fire the guy. I do think that if it were a big, gigantic, tippy-top star, and he was going to main event WrestleMania, and WrestleMania was coming, and he got his third strike, I think they would find a way to not fire the guy. That's all I'm saying. But you can't do that in UFC. You can't do that. If a guy fails and a commission yanks his license, unless you want to draw the ire of all of these commissions for the foreseeable future, you can't cover this up and you can't yank it. They're gonna make this public. You're the test fail. I mean, it's just gonna happen. You can't change the rules like WWE can because of the commission involvement. That's number one. Number two. Let's say John Cena has zero strikes on his record. But let's say, because he's the biggest star in the company, we'll use him as an example. Let's say that John Cena got two strikes. He's had two strikes before. And let's say that his match with The Rock is coming up at WrestleMania. And the week before WrestleMania, he gets popped with a third strike. If they wanted to, and they would, obviously, they would say, all right, he's doing the match at Mania. He's losing to The Rock, and then we're firing him. You can't do that in UFC. If you bring back Nick Diaz, Mike, and you give him his fight with George St. Pierre, and he beats George St. Pierre and he wins the championship, if he tests positive, you cannot book an immediate rematch the next month, hope that he loses the title, and then suspend and or fire him. You can't do that. If he wins the title from George St. Pierre and tests positive, you have got to, he's done, number one. The title is done in the sense that now your champion is gone, and so you've beaten George St. Pierre, and now the best you can do is just rule the fight a no contest and give him the belt back, which is going to cheapen the title. The entire thing is a disaster that cannot be remedied. So to me, it's different from pro wrestling. If it's pro wrestling, yeah, I don't fire the guy. I go, all right, we take the risk. If he fails again, we have him drop the title to somebody, and then we fire him. But in MMA, all of those rules are out the window. If you bring back Nick Diaz, all you're doing is you're guaranteed that at some point it's going to bite you on the ass. You're pretty much guaranteed at this point after five, I mean, literally, if you count press conferences and flights and failures, everything like that, I mean, he's got at least five strikes. So at this point, I just can't justify bringing him back. I just can't do it.
I know, and you would be exactly right. I'm not going to go head up with any statements that you're making, but to take the other side of it, to do that would have to, you've got to look at it all. I mean, it's purely promotion and business, and it's a terrible thing to say, but, you know, he comes back after a year, and he does want to fight, and he does test clean, and you put him out there, and he doesn't, he actually makes his flights and all that. I mean, I wouldn't give him GSP right away, a Koscheck or somebody like that to make, you know, look. It's a business in making money, so if you completely take the emotional aspect out of it, take away, he's not going to cheapen the belt. If somebody wins a title and then tests positive for something, it doesn't really cheapen it all that much. They cheapen themselves because they got a title stripped from them because they can't stop taking drugs. So I don't think it would be that epically bad, but it's a moral issue. I think at this point with Nick Diaz, it's a moral issue. If you bring him back and you want to invest into him, it's purely about making money with him. It's purely about a fight with GSP or Koscheck, and it's purely 101,000,000% about that. Because otherwise, everything you're saying is correct. But business and making money and things like that, when the public demands things, I mean, look, Dana Bent, even though he thought Condit won, he comes out and says, well, maybe Diaz won, and he listened to them, and they tried to set up a rematch for a fight that should not have been a rematch, period. So, you know.
Well, hold that thought. I hate to cut you off, but we're going to go to a break. I'll let you continue ranting when we come back. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Mike is in the middle of a rant on Nick Diaz. Mike, continue.
Well, not really a rant on Nick Diaz, but again, if you look at what business, look at what usually wins out in the end. Business, listening to the public, wanting to set up a fight, taking that look. Mike Tyson had to be pulled off of his meds in order to go out there and kill people. What do we know about Mike Tyson? Mike Tyson probably be better off on his meds, but they pulled him off of him when he had to fight. And, you know, look, it's still the fight game, and as slimy as this sounds, Nick Diaz will probably be back for all the reasons I just said, because most of the time, that's what wins out. And you know what, from the UFC's point of view, they could look at it as just, we're going to use Nick Diaz. And they could give him Koscheck first, see if he, you know, fights GSP. And you know what? If he wins, and again, I think you're overstating the value of, like, when you're saying it's not wrestling, but then kind of putting in that prism of it's going to devalue the title and you beat George St. Pierre. Well, George St. Pierre's lost before already. And if Nick Diaz beats him, you know, so be it. You know, if Nick Diaz beats George St. Pierre, so be it. Okay, yeah, he won the fight, but when if he gets stripped of the title afterwards, I mean, that makes nobody look bad except for Nick Diaz. The UFC is still going to keep spinning. You know, this is not like when Josh Barnett, you know, tested positive for steroids and Rico Rodriguez had issues and all this other stuff when they were UFC heavyweight champions. It's not the same thing. So the only person Nick Diaz hurts is himself. And, you know, obviously he's not going to retire. I would seriously doubt he's going to retire from what he's saying. But, you know, if you're, again, if I'm the UFC, business usually wins out in the end. Although, again, morally, it's more than an issue. And frankly, yeah, like from what you said, business-wise, obviously, they don't need to bring him back. So if they do bring him back, you know what it's all about. And no one should be surprised by that. And frankly, from the outrage of people after this Condit fight, yeah, most people agree with that anyway.
The outrage in terms of what?
In terms of, you know, people were way... I honestly, in that camp of people that believe that the reason that people were so upset over this Condit decision was the fact that they just desperately wanted, they love Nick Diaz, or they closet love Nick Diaz, and they wanted to see that fight with GSP. That's not going to stop a year from now.
Well, I agree. I would have rather seen Diaz versus GSP, but that was before he failed his test.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, I think for the average person, though, Brian, you're thinking about this a lot more cerebrally and long-term. What's, you know, Nick Diaz, at some point, what does Nick Diaz do? Because he's going to have to stop fighting. Is he just in the gym all the time? I mean, Nick Diaz is, again, he's got issues, and he is what he is, and I don't know. I mean, again, but is that the UFC's concern?
What I mean, he's going to coach his guys. He's going to, you know, teach kids jits.
Oh, yeah. I want to see Nick Diaz and Jeff Jarrett in a room with kindergartners working
no,
on
that. No, there was footage of that on the on that primetime. I was amazed. I mean, listen, I'm not saying that Nick Diaz can't coach kids at jiu-jitsu. I'm sure he's probably really good at it. But it's just amazing to see, like, here's a school, and here's Nick Diaz teaching your kids how to do jiu-jitsu. Again, I'm sure he's great, but my God, can you imagine? I mean, the parents have to never go on the internet. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just like, wow, this crazy man is teaching my kids. Can you imagine if these parents saw the prime time, what they'd be thinking?
Now, see, I don't know. I got Avery, who's a hardy child. I might actually send him in there because, look, if nothing, Nick Diaz, with those pitter-pat punches that don't look like they hurt, really hurt, you know, if his jiu-jitsu is excellent, I'd send Avery to that camp.
I think he's just better off just teaching kids jiu-jitsu, to be honest with you, and adults. I mean, listen, this whole, why did Nick Diaz fail for weed?
Dude's tight, look. Everything here is, you know, no one could walk in somebody else's shoes and be in their own brain, period. But Nick Diaz seems to be tightly packed. You know, Nick Diaz seems to have the fallback of, obviously, he's got a medical marijuana card, but marijuana's his thing. You know, everybody, I think, knows someone that smokes weed every day who functions without problems, who has got no issues, who can roll along in life. Nick Diaz is a unique guy. He handles pressures, you know, in his own way, and he's very hard-headed in, obviously hard-headed in saying that, you know, he's either hard-headed or addicted.
Well, you know, I think the point I was getting at was, I don't know why he failed, but my guess is that I talked about this a couple of days ago, and shockingly, a lot of what I said was misconstrued on our board. I don't know what Nick's levels were going into the fight. I know that going into the Gomi fight, his levels were extremely high in the sense that this wasn't a guy who 4 weeks before the fight stopped smoking and he just happened to have some lingering metabolites in his system and that's why he failed. No, for the Gomi fight, he had some high levels. You know, whether that meant that a couple of days before the fight he was smoking, Or I do know that there was one report that his metabolites were so high that some people believed he'd actually gone into the ring stoned. Okay? That to me is bad news. You know? But if your metabolites are such that, you quit 5 days before, then to me that has absolutely zero bearing on the fight whatsoever. None. Even if you were smoking the day before and you go into the fight, that has no bearing to me on the fight whatsoever. None. Now, with that said, why would someone have super high metabolites going into a fight? To me, the answer is because he was so freaked out and so nervous and so anxious about this fight that he could not help but smoke in the days or the week before the fight. In which case, quite frankly, I know there were people that were defending this going, listen, you know, he's not going in for a performance advantage. He's not going in. He's not trying to numb the pain or whatever. He's not trying to do any of that. The guy was just freaking out before the fight, and he smoked to calm down. In which case, I still have to say, this sport's not for you. Because everybody going into a fight is going to be freaked out and anxious. So, I don't know.
I think he's in the routine of being, you know, that's obviously it's his escape and he needs it and feels as though he needs it. He's got the card for it, you know.
Okay, well, yeah. If your anxiety is such that you know you're going to be tested on the day of the fight and you're not allowed to have any of this in your system, but you're so anxious about this fight that you can't help but smoke, then this sport's not for you. I'm sorry.
Well,
it's just
for
not
you,
for you.
Because realistically, Brian, he could be bagging groceries at a Safeway, and it's the same thing. You know, there's nothing that says if Nick Diaz was in another line of work that he was getting tested like this, that this wouldn't be an issue.
Well, wait, hold on, no.
It wouldn't be a surprise.
If he has a medical marijuana card, then if he wants to bag groceries in Stockton, great! He's got a card! But that's in California. This has nothing to do with being a fighter and being licensed to fight in Nevada. You
sure
can't.
Because there's no card in Nevada.
Yeah, so you can't. Just look, listen.
Look, you're right. I mean, we waste a lot of breath on this. And the thing is, you're right. But that doesn't mean at the end of the day they're not going to use him again. You know, the psychoanalyzation of Nick Diaz can only go so far because, again, you're not in his head, and nobody is. It's just, it's obvious that at the end of the day, and people who are pro-marijuana aren't going to want to hear this, but in the case of Nick Diaz, because of how it's affected his work, his employment, how he feeds his kids, how he has talked about the fact that so many times, time and time again, the UFC, look at the small house I have, look at the small car I have. You know, I need to feed my family. Yet he now puts himself in a position, whether he's got a legal card or not, whether he smoked legally 30 days ago and it just didn't get out of his system fast enough, at the end of the day, he tested positive for marijuana in his fight. He's going to be suspended a year, or at least he should be suspended a year. And that's kind of really the extent of it.
Let's move on. I can't talk any more about this. I'm driving myself crazy talking about Nick Diaz. Let's
why does he stick in your crawl so much when so many other athletes and so many other people? I mean, I'm not going to say that this is just another story, but in a way, it's just I'm amazed how you are so upset over this.
About what? Just the fact that he failed or in general?
Just being so fired up.
Tell you why I'm so fired up. Because I have to listen to Nick Diaz all the time talk about how he's poor. And I have to listen to Nick Diaz talk all the time about how he's got no money and he doesn't have a big house and he has to run through the neighborhood with all the big houses and how he wants to make the big money and how this is all BS and these fighters don't get paid. And here he is in the biggest fight of his life. And if he wins, he's going to get an even bigger fight in one night. He will go from that guy who has no money and drives in a horrible broken-down car to a millionaire in one night. And he still fails his test. That's what drives me crazy.
Man, there's one thing that athletes and fighters, boxers especially, but now it's MMA because of the rise of it, there is one thing that they know how to do, which is sabotage themselves.
That's what drives me crazy.
Story out on the street, it's going to be an MMA story soon.
That's what drives me crazy. He cares so much about making money and fighting and becoming a success, so he claims. But he cares more about smoking. That drives me crazy. Make your $1 million and then smoke. Don't cry to me about how you have no money, and then in the biggest chance of your life to make millions of dollars, you just can't stop smoking. That just drives me absolutely out of my mind. We'll be back in a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next 20 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, and no more Nick Diaz. I'm done with it. I'm done with it!
Get out. Get out, Nick Diaz.
Till they bring him back in a year, in which case we're going to have a special four-hour show where I cry.
Now, will there be residual hatred for Nate Diaz because of this?
I don't hate Nick, and I like Nate. Because you know what? Nate always shows up to fight. And Nate always passes his tests. I don't care. I don't care if Nate Diaz has a house made of weed. I don't care. I do not care one bit who smokes. I don't care how much you smoke. I don't care if you smoke every day. I, honest to God, I don't care if you, like, smoke one day before the fight, and you take some magic potion, and you pass your test.
A wizinator.
I'd prefer if you didn't go into the cage stoned. I would prefer if you didn't do that. But, again, do whatever you want. But don't cry to me about your financial state, and how hard you've worked, and how little you have to show for it. And then in your one chance, you smoke it all away. That's what infuriates me. Nate Diaz doesn't go in there and fail his tests. You know, if Nate Diaz has a title shot, if Nate Diaz has a chance to headline a pay-per-view and fight for a title and make hundreds of thousands of dollars, history has shown me that Nate Diaz isn't going to fail his test. So good for you, Nate! I have no problem with Nate. I have no problem with anybody on Nick Diaz's team. I don't know this, but the chances are that there are people on Nate Diaz's team that smoke weed. And when Jake Shields, I don't know if Jake Shields smokes weed, but if he does, guess what? He had a fight with GSP in front of 55,000 people at the most attended UFC of all time with a title shot on the line, and he did not fail his test. So way to go, Jake Shields! That's what the thing that infuriates me most about Nick Diaz is he can't pass. He cries louder than anyone, Mike. Who cries louder than Nick Diaz about how much money he doesn't make?
But there's not so many guys out there that are that charismatic doing it.
But it doesn't matter.
They suck people into believing it.
Does anybody cry more than Nick Diaz about how much money they make?
No.
No. And he's the guy that fails his test. Nick Diaz is the guy that cries and cries and cries about having no money, and he ends up getting the winning lottery ticket, and he smokes it.
That happened in Nice Dreams.
He rolls a blunt, or whatever the term is, with the lotto ticket and smokes the whole thing. That's what he is. That's what infuriates me. Let's talk about something else.
I know.
At the end of the day,
he's only hurting himself.
Before my head is smoked.
Boy, TNA, Nick Diaz, it's been like that today.
Can't we talk about stuff that's fun in this business? I'm waiting for WrestleMania build to get good. So far, it's all right.
At least we figure you're going to get Jericho and Punk at WrestleMania, so that makes me happy.
I thought Jericho and Punk had a great segment on Raw.
That That jacket is fantastic.
It really is. I wasn't sold.
Can that jacket be voted Rookie of the Year next year in the Observer Newsletter Awards?
I wasn't sold on the jacket until this week. I thought the jacket, until this week, I thought, this jacket's just like a, it's a gimmick. But then this week on the show, I saw that jacket and I was like, God, this jacket's awesome. I don't know why. I don't know why, but this week the jacket won me over.
Well, and the fact that he's really, you know, he's made fun with the jacket, and he did that skit backstage where he just walked and he kind of threw his head up at the camera with a smile and turned the jacket on and walked away and stuff like that. But the fact that he's being, everyone's taking my stuff, I hate all you guys, and just not even really selling the fact that he's wearing a blinking, wacky jacket is just, for some reason, incredibly funny to me.
It's phenomenal. It's phenomenal.
It's great, and it's old pro wrestling, and it worked. It was people being sucked in. It's cheap, and we wondered how long it would take for the fans to stop booing him. Until he goes the second time around to that city, that's when they would have stopped booing him. So unless they did something, you know, it wasn't going to work. Not that it wasn't going to work, but, you know, they weren't going to stop booing him. And him coming out on Monday and ripping, running down everyone, it's just, it's perfect.
I just like it because I think one of the reasons I like it is because Jericho understands that people aren't paying just to see your average geek. You know, this is the oldest saying in wrestling. People aren't paying to see their neighbor. Okay? I'm not going to pop out $15 to go see my neighbor stand in a wrestling ring. Okay? People pay to see big stars.
Yours did.
And who did?
Nothing.
I did pay to see my neighbor?
No, I said yours did.
My neighbors did?
Yeah, spent $15 to see you.
No, they didn't. Not those people. Anyway, the point is, Jericho, like, found a guy that made blinking jackets for superstar rock stars. And he was like, I want one of those. And he had one made, and I'll bet it wasn't cheap. And now he wears it because he's trying to be a star. Good for him. Good for him. That's why I like the jacket.
Well, that's... you know, it's like what William Regal had a thing. Somebody asked him, I guess, on Twitter about being a pro wrestler, you know, and all the things you got to go through. One of the things was just like, you know, see what's around you. Think the things that actually make you happy and you're comfortable with and the things you like and take from that. And then after you take from it, you know, figure out a way to recycle it into something original. And that's something Chris Jericho, who pointed out, you know, making fun of The Miz, you know, for it. But and it was instant. When The Miz turned on Morrison and he went into the suit and everything, he went, that's exactly what Jericho did. Well, he's ripping off Jericho. When Jericho did it, people were saying, well, he's kind of ripping off Bockwinkle. So it's, he took it and makes it his own, and he's a guy that is just great at it and so incredibly unselfish with it.
I think there'd be I'm trying to think of how they'd do this. I just think that maybe Bockwinkle could get involved in this CM Punk Chris Jericho storyline.
Imagine Jericho going off on a long-winded promo where he's, you know, when he's breaking out, calling people parasitic and all of those sorts of things on a long, like, you know, verbal rant, and then, you know, this camera pans over and it's Nick Bockwinkle sitting there. It's just, yes, there's got to be some sort of tie in there.
Yeah, he's got a rant and rave about how everyone steals all of his gimmicks, everything like that, and then Bockwinkle just needs to come into the ring.
Calls him a humanoid.
Yeah, then, you know, a lot of different things we can
do. Oh, stealing his moves to Danny Hodge, who could still actually, I don't know how old he is now, 88 or whatever it is, could actually jump over the ropes and stretch Jericho. That would be fantastic.
I know that tomorrow on Raw, Shawn Michaels is returning. And I guess we'll see where the storyline goes. But it appears at WrestleMania this year, they are going to do the gimmick they didn't do last year, which was Undertaker versus Triple H, streak on the line, Shawn Michaels as the special guest referee. And of course, Shawn Michaels, his best friend, is Triple H. And the Undertaker is the guy that he couldn't beat, and that ended his career. So, will Shawn Michaels screw the Undertaker out of the streak? Do they have a secret plan? We'll find out this year. I like the storyline.
See, I would like it, but not yet. I say boo to it just because I want to see they were. It's too bad they didn't have enough time to see if they could just suck people in without going that direction with using Shawn Michaels, because it cheapens him coming back again. And I think they could probably get people, if they gave it enough time and started it earlier, I think they probably could have gotten people in there, and they didn't have to waste using the Shawn Michaels stipulation. Not that it's going to be a waste, but I think people may buy it seeing it again and saying, you know what, Undertaker, you did beat him, but you were the one who had to be carried out, and we didn't see you again for a year. So I think you could have played it up that way, not even with Shawn Michaels, but with that said, when has Shawn Michaels made anything bad in the last couple of years? You know, he's going to be a fine addition, and once again, it makes complete and utter sense.
Well, I think the problem is you're thinking of this as a traditional three-match feud, where, yeah, that would be a great second act in a three-act play, like Oklahoma, in fact. But I think that this is the last year of this match, and so I think you got to do it. This would be 20-0 for Undertaker. I mean, I don't want to say that anybody's going to retire, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was a retirement stipulation put on here for Triple H. If, like, you know, they added that Triple H is putting his wrestling career on the line against the streak with Shawn Michaels as the guest referee, you know, will Shawn Michaels count his best friend out of a career, or will he count out the guy that ended his career? You know, that's a great storyline there. And at 20-0, you know, you can convince people that it'll be broken before 20-0, or maybe after 20-0, Undertaker will retire. You know, why keep going? If you got 20-0, you're still able to walk. Now's the time to get out. So I think that this is probably going to be the last time they do this match. And like you said, I mean, this is a storyline where the Undertaker, who's as old school as they come, and Shawn Michaels, who's got a ridiculous, like a brilliant wrestling brain, and Triple H, who he's got a great wrestling mind. I wouldn't call him like one of the greatest wrestling minds of all time. I would rank him third, probably behind Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, to be honest. I mean, we've never really seen Undertaker's ideas, and he's been involved in some horrible feuds. But Undertaker's been around forever. I'm quite confident he knows his stuff. So I think the three of them together, without a goofball writing team coming up with dialogue and storylines and swerves, I think those three guys putting their own program together, I think it's going to be awesome. I'm not getting too excited, because I've trained myself not to get too excited about WWE storylines. But when I really think about it, those three guys unfiltered, I think that's going to be just great.
Well, that's the thing, is you know it's going to be unfiltered. You know it's going to be there, so you know it's going to be great. There's no reason for it not to be. So it just, yeah, it's going to be great. Now, the thing is, too, I think, again, if it's only one match this year, I could see Undertaker doing it again next year. And the thing is, you know, he's even more broken down by that point, which is, again, why if you could have gotten away with not doing Shawn Michaels this year, I think he definitely could have did that next year, because who else would The Undertaker face? It's like, you know, it's almost like...
Well, I'm presuming this could be the last match.
That's... Well, I guess you'll have Steve Austin next year if those rumors come to pass, so it would, you know, kind of lighten the blow of your annual Undertaker appearance, although I guess you could have him there without, you know, actually wrestling, too.
I think Undertaker should...
That's going to be weird to think about. It really is.
I think Undertaker should be the guy that... Actually, I think I had this idea for Kane, where every year at WrestleMania, Kane comes out and tombstones a celebrity. You could even do it with Undertaker. That'd be your annual WrestleMania appearance, where, again, everybody always likes swerves in wrestling, but sometimes the best things in wrestling are things that you know are going to happen, and you get it. Like, if you did a deal where every year Undertaker comes out and he tombstones a celebrity, you know? You know every year that, oh my God, you know, CeeLo Green is going to be tombstoned by The Undertaker. They just announced him for Mania. And he comes out and he does his thing, and all of a sudden the lights go out and the gong hits, and here comes Undertaker to tombstone this fool. And every year the fool's there. You know, he doesn't run. He's just like, oh, what's going to happen? He gets tombstoned. Something you give the fans live every year, and if they buy it, they get to see it every year, and they laugh, and they're happy. And it's just that moment, that WrestleMania moment. And he doesn't have to have a match. He just has to do a tombstone every year. Let's go to a break.
Even in a wrestling ring that just falls to the ground and can't go anywhere.
Sure. Wrestling Observer Live, everybody. Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, how awesome is Daniel Bryan?
Pretty damn awesome. Like, really damn awesome. Mighty beard, vegan ways, not tanning too much, got the hot chick he's involved in the feud. Yeah, he's doing all right. You know, I know Daniel Bryan is not positioned in the way I would if I were running that company, but with that said, he's taking the ball that he's got right now and running as fast as he can with it, and I salute Daniel Bryan.
You want to know something? Daniel Bryan, besides being a great worker and a great talker, he's also a great spray-on tanner.
It's another reason people hate The Miz.
I have seen some god-awful spray tans, including at the Royal Rumble with The Miz. His spray tan was horrendous, and every time he took a bump, he left a splotch, an orange splotch in the middle of the ring. But Daniel Bryan, last I heard, which was a few years ago, he was unable to tan. He had I don't even know what it was. I hate to use the term disorder.
Melatonin or something?
He had something where he couldn't tan. And that's why he was always so pale. He would try to tan, and it would just be like a complete disaster. So apparently he's figured out, or he's found a place, or whatever the deal is. But he always looks, well, not like, you know, Randy Orton or anything like that. But he's got some color to him, and it does not look as horrible as, you know, who also has a horrible spray tan is Cody Rhodes. Oh, my God, that guy.
Yeah, really.
Dolph Ziggler has some bad ones, too. I think part of the problem is the guys that, you know, maybe they travel on the road with other guys, and they can't bring themselves to ask the other guys to put the spray tan on their back. So it's like only their front is tan, and you can actually see the line down the sides where that's as far as they can reach on their own shoulders. It looks so wacky. These are like pro wrestling superstars. You can't figure out how to apply a spray tan. Someone needs to talk to Daniel Bryan about this.
For this stuff. They took tanning beds with them. What's wrong with these people?
I don't know. We're out of time, everybody, for the wackiest show we've done in a while. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, of course, here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for listening. Mike, of course, all the people at Sports Byline. Been a fun time, everybody. WrestlingObserver.com. Check it out. We'll talk to you again after a while.